Yo, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon Trading Card Game's premier podcasting trio. My name is Riley Hulbert, joined as always by Girl Dad JW Kriwal and my good friend Mr. Andrew Mahone. Boys, how's it going today?
Dead silence.
It's like
Me waiting for JW to take the lead, like
old me being very
Western
patient,
duel,
waiting
you know?
Andrew, I'm waiting for Andrew, me being the, they
Well,
say
you know,
chivalry is
I just
dead,
know
but
how much JW loves to be first in a
jump in
situation like
there.
this. Yeah, so I was just gonna let him waltz in and then kind of mosey my way in after.
Well,
So
I've
JW,
it's
how are you doing, JW?
Hey
You
man,
were off last week.
I
Welcome
was.
back.
Yeah,
What's up?
thanks. My mental health is way better this week, so that's a big thing. We just got, done. I don't know if you guys know, but Thanksgiving was last week, so I
News to me,
personally
man.
had some good time with family and friends, eating and reminiscing and guffawing.
A hearty guffaw.
Hearty guffaws. Yes, we have a very, I was telling you guys before the cast, but we have a very, it's a very regimented but predictable Thanksgiving routine. And it's like pretty much every year without fail. There's no family drama. There's no weirdness about the day. Everybody has their assignments. They know what they're gonna do. We have a whole, our appetizers into dinner, into football, into games and such. Like it's a pretty smooth day, so it was a really nice Thanksgiving.
Might post a picture of myself with my wife, draw a big black mark on her face.
That was for the engagement.
No, it was not. No, it was not, bro.
There's actually a story about that. So what Andrew's referencing is I posted on Thanksgiving a tweet, or the day after Thanksgiving, it was Friday, a tweet of me and Anne and Harper. And there is a large, like, it looks like somebody went into Microsoft Paint and drew with the pencil tool down Anne's face, a big black mark.
And how are you gonna
So,
explain this one away?
okay, well, do you want to know why it was posted on Friday instead of Thursday?
Had to add the big black line to her face.
So it was a friend of ours that had taken the photo, and he had taken a few photos, and somehow the black line got on Anne's face. So I was like, hey,
In all of them?
well, no, he sent me the one with the black line, and I'm like, oh, this has a black line, and it was towards the end of the night. So I'm like, hey, can you send me a regular one, and I'll post it, right? And so this is not a this is a family friend, but retired, great guy, little on the older side. So
So you're
then,
not taking credit for the photo, is what you're saying.
no, not for the photo. And there was a good one, and we did actually walk through, like, okay, I would like this one. And then I tried sending it to myself, but the Wi-Fi where we were at couldn't handle the file transfer. So he was like,
Oh
okay, I'll do it when I get back to the hotel. And then
no.
that was the one he sent, but I really didn't have the heart to be like, you know what? Can you go back and send the real one? So, I just posted it, and then I got some good engagement from you, Andrew.
Oh, you never just post this picture, bro. You
Sure you
never.
do.
You are
Sure you
not
do.
just like you're not just like a random person
Nah,
posting to
sure.
like your friends and family. Like you've
Nah,
got
whatever, bro.
thousands of followers, bro, who have like limited
Nah, whatever.
viewing. You have 6,500 followers who do not get to see
Yeah,
your
whatever.
child and wife all the time. This is like a very family-oriented picture. Like there's a huge, an avoidable gigantic
know.
blemish on
I know.
your wife's face. And then if I had to predict, if Anne gave the cosign to ship this to 6,500 people, my prediction would be that she does not know about it.
Oh my
Which is why I'm going to make it a point to bring it up the next time we see each other.
Okay, well, I hope you don't
As one
forget.
of the 6,500 people who had the pleasure
I
of
hope you
seeing this
don't I
picture.
hope you don't forget.
Well,
I hope
realistically, it probably hit more people, right? Because everyone who likes it, like, that could be on their friends feed.
We could actually check engagement.
Well,
yeah,
see,
we
that's
the
thing, right? That's a thing.
18,000. Yeah, 18,000 impressions. Yep.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine, right? So,
that's,
like,
that's fine. That's
you
fine.
Know, and the black mark, like, I also think this is kind of plays into a little bit of my you know, you could get a peek behind the curtain of how I like to craft social media posts. And I think it's really good if there's like a little bit of subversiveness to the post.
That's what it was. Yes.
Well, you know, it could be construed that way, right? I can make an argument that by including the little black line, I increased my engagement because people were like, what the heck is going on? Like, I mean, you right. obviously
and
commented.
Everybody knows that when it comes to engagement, and the respect of your spouse,
one
trumps the other. One clearly trumps the other.
It wasn't that big. Wasn't that noticeable?
I feel like your tune is changing, JW.
Wasn't a big deal. You can barely see it.
So was it subversive or was it not a big deal?
Wow. Well,
see,
know.
So what going in, I just assumed that you flubbed it and press send without noticing. But now that I know that you knew it.
Well, what was I going to do, Andrew? Not post a picture of me and my family on a major holiday?
Wait the one extra day to get the other picture.
I did wait an extra day.
an extra day. Take another picture.
Like, nah, bro, I wouldn't have my bow tie on. Harper wouldn't be looking that cute. You know?
Why didn't you just have him send you all the pictures if he was going to do it at the hotel?
I know. I didn't realize it would be a big... I didn't realize it would be...
You have a lot of followers. All your posts are like, you know, it's at a point. Everything you post can be somewhat of a big deal.
It's 6,000 people. Who cares? You know? I mean, I care about all my 6,000 followers, obviously. Like, they're dear to me like family, but beyond you guys.
Family.
Who cares?
Every person who follows you is dear to you like a family member.
Yeah, and you see how dearly I treat my wife.
Yeah, okay.
With the big black line across her face.
Fair enough. Well, I feel like we could talk about this for easily an hour. So
easily,
we'll just have to move on. Probably
many layers, like an onion.
Yes, I also had a wonderful weekend. My family came up from Baltimore and spent some time here, so that was really nice getting to see them. Had a nice dinner out we did on Saturday. You know, Thanksgiving itself was actually super low key for me. We just. Alex Holtz actually came over and crashed, and we just played Gym Leader Challenge all day, and Natalie made a nice meal for us, and we didn't go anywhere or do anything, and watched football all day. It was pretty sweet. And then my family visiting was super nice. Natalie's mom came over and made us all brunch on Sunday morning, and it was just really nice opportunity to get together as a family, and it's really nice. So
really great that they came to you. That's a
yeah.
That's a big deal.
It's big. It is. Yeah. Well, we usually trade off Thanksgiving and Christmas. So, like, they'll come up for one and we'll come down for the other. So, we're going down for Christmas this year. They came up for Thanksgiving. And that way, you know, it doesn't have to be the same group traveling twice. So,
right. That's fair.
Yes, sir. So, that's what we had. And then also over the weekend, there were some major Pokemon tournaments, which we'll be able to discuss today.
Yeah, doubleheader regional weekend, which is always great fun. So we had Gdansk and Brisbane happening both this past weekend, and very different outcomes across the two tournaments. So over in Brisbane, top eight dominated by Gardevoir. Gardevoir ends up winning the event. And in Gdansk, we have everybody's favorite deck in the format, Snorlax Stall, winning. So pretty different opposite sides of the spectrum going on here. Let's just dive right into it. GW, since you were absent last week, I think it's only fair that you get first dibs on making your hot takes. So what's coming out of Brisbane and Gdansk?
I am so happy that these two tournaments featured as much Snorlax as they did. I had thought coming into this format with the release of Countercatcher that that was going to really unlock Snorlax as a top tier archetype. And I think I was proven right this weekend. I feel like at LAIC, a lot of players kind of held back a little bit and just tried to feel out the meta, even though we did see a Snorlax on the top eight over there. You know, I think it was certainly like kind of that that was the player to that was the tournament to just test the waters and see, OK, could this archetype survive? And I think a lot of players gravitated more towards Snorlax after seeing a top eight in LAIC. And we saw three in the combined top eights of Gdansk and Brisbane. So that for me is like, yes, I was saying that this was a top tier archetype. I think this weekend very clearly shows that, especially at a regional level, you need to be prepared for Snorlax.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. Whenever I talk about stall, I always think you got to not only just weigh how good the deck is, right? You got to also weigh how popular it is. So is what you're saying is that stall will be popular enough to warrant preparing for it?
Well, that's a different question, I think. I mean, because I think there are some very easy answers that you can slide into certain decks. So for instance, Gardevoir, I think should play at least one pivot, maybe a Turo and a Palpad. Like that is very easy and makes a lot of sense to go in the deck. I probably wouldn't, if I was trying to beat stall, I probably wouldn't be jamming a bunch of unnecessary cards into my list to try to make that happen. But certainly there are considerations that you can make when you're building these decks. I mean, again, like I think the Pokemon Company has given us a ton of different options. Turo is one that comes to mind. The Minior is one. We obviously have all the Switch cards that we would normally have in Escape Rope, Switch card, Switch. I mean, there's a lot of different things that a player can do to navigate around the stall matchup. And the other thing too is like we have kind of soft counters too, right? Judge is particularly difficult at times for the stall player to deal with. Things like Path can be hard if you slam it early. So I think there are other soft counters, you know, and ways Tomb to build decks. Spirit Tomb, yeah, is another great example, right? So there are like some of these soft counters that you can also play to gain an advantage there.
It's one thing I specifically did want to talk about is the Minior. People have been posting a lot about Minior on Twitter, both pro and anti Minior takes. I'm curious, do you all think that Minior is actually like a stall matchup winner card, or is it overhyped?
I'm never playing the Minior in any of my decks, straight up. I'm like, and I'm not opposed to playing little silver bullet techs like that, but I mean, the use case for Minior is just so narrow, and I feel like if the stall player is going to counter the counter in any way, they might be able to include a one-of card to deal with a one-of Minior without too much problem. What a stall player cannot deal with is like a Turo scenario, like a poorly timed Turo scenario, and like a Palpad. Like those kinds of things are going to drive the stall player insane. And are going to ruin their day. A Minior is like a known quantity that a stall player may be able to navigate around. So I'm not a Minior believer. I also, you know, tend to be of
Go ahead, Andrew. I just have a follow-up question.
I tend to be of the, and this is, you know, not been a strategy that's worked out for me too well lately, but I tend to be of the type of person to let others, you know, do the dirty work to hate certain decks that I don't want to play against out of the meta and then play the decks that are going to be more streamlined without the text. I do tend to like that. I will say that I like Turo as a card. I don't like Minior.
What don't you like about Minior? How would a Snorlax player counter Minior? I mean, I have a few ideas, but I'm just like, you know, you seem very like, oh, it would be, you know, now Snorlax players might be able to tech for Minior, but what are some of those ideas there that a Snorlax player could use to get around Minior?
Snorlax players could play a Dunsparce to turn off their weakness. They could play a Beach Quartz to make it so that their retreat cost is less. They could have some sort of strategy cooked up so that they can knock out the Mini-Or and loss on it. I mean, these are all different strategies that stall decks have, like, employed. Like, stall decks have employed these kinds of strategies in the past of, like, knock out the problem card, you know, and then continue on your business, right? Stuff like that. So a stall player can make a game last, like, pretty long. And if your only out is the Mini-Or, and that's all the stall player has to navigate around, then I'm saying that they just may be able to cook up a response to that. It seems easier to me to cook up a response to Mini-Or than it is to cook up a response to a Turo. And Turo is a card that can have more uses in other situations than a card like Mini-Or will, which is why I kind of tend to just say, like, just play a switch or two.
I think Mini-Or is so fake. I'm with you. I think Mini-Or is so fake. They can also counter it with like a Mawile and the vest that reduces damage. Just Mawile the Mini-Or. And now your counter card is stuck active and doing zero damage and you lose.
And if you don't play a switch, right? Or like a Turo, then you still you lose, right? Yeah.
So. Yeah. And the Mini-Or loses you the game in that situation. So I think Mini-Or is super fake. I don't know. If I was gonna tech, I think the easiest, most extensible soft tech is just putting a Spear Tomb in your deck and, you know, hoping they brick. And yeah, that's not great. But if you're looking for like a low maintenance thing that also has an impact against Mew, you know, play Spear Tomb. If you want to play more high maintenance cards, you know, play Turo or increase your switch count. Don't play something goofy like Mini-Or. The only other use case I can even think of for Mini-Or is like, in Charizard, you could put like a Defiance Band on it and knock out an Iron Hands, which would be sick, to be fair. But just knock it out with the Charizard.
Yeah, at the point that you're trying to use Mini-Or, you're probably in range already with Charizard. So that tracks. Yeah, all right. Notified Mini-Or haters on this
podcast. What about you, DW? You like Mini-Or?
I kind of like it. I mean, I think you look at it in a deck like Charizard, where you otherwise have pretty much a 0% chance to beat the stall matchup, and it gives you a reasonable shot, at least with the way that the stall decks are constructed at this point in time, which I also find very interesting that among the top eight in Brisbane and Wukash's winning list in Gdansk, they were all within like five cards of each other, which I think is really fascinating, just that this has kind of been the way to play this archetype that's playing so many different cards to handle so many situations. So anyway, that's you know, again, another kind of larger talk there. But I like Mini-Or, especially in a deck that has no shot without it. Give yourself a chance. Why not?
I guess my counterpoint is like, if you have zero shot without it and the stall players are already planning around people playing Mini-Or, so then you kind of basically have zero shot with it. Then why are you playing the stupid card in your deck?
Well, it doesn't, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't make sense moving forward, but it certainly would have made sense to me heading into this weekend.
I think exactly. I think there's like two Charizard lists that both play Mini-Or in Australia, right? In Brisbane, I'm pretty sure. And like there were two Snorlax in top eight. And like I'm sure they were stoked to have it, right? So yeah. I think it was probably a good call.
Oh, they didn't both have Mini-Or. One did.
One had Mini-Or. Yeah. It was probably a pretty decent call this past weekend. But going forward, I certainly do not see myself as the kind of player who would play Mini-Or in my deck.
Yeah, it's just beneath a player such as yourself. I just,
you know, I also guess. Never played Giratina Prism or Giratina promo for the Greninja Break. I never played that card. You know?
Right. Yeah. Did no. You? I mean, I think there's a real like trust the meta to sort itself out. And sometimes you can be on the short end of that stick, right? Yeah. Sometimes you can just be punished for not playing the hard counter where you end up playing two or three of the matchup that you wished you would have teched for. But I think by and large, we're all largely in agreement where we're generally not going to over tech for a matchup, especially one like Stahl, where it might be a high tier archetype, but not many players are going to play it, and not many players are going to play it well.
And the thing is, when you hear stories, I mean, because a lot of this is circumstantial evidence, right? I mean, when you just go off of, like, you know, like, oh, I teched for this, and I played it, and I won, you know? You hear stories like that, and you certainly have experiences like that. But, you know, how many of these kinds of situations are you just, like, latching on to the times the tech worked and saved you? And then how many times are you consciously thinking about the times you played a tech and it was worthless all day? Mm-hmm. You know, how many times has that happened? And now, you know, and how much is that registering in your decision making? Because having useless cards in your deck, that stinks. All right, that feels horrendous.
And I think for most people, they don't necessarily think of it in terms of the deck slot being that valuable. They'll think of the times where they started a Minier and they lost because of it, but they won't think of the time that they drew a Minier off their Iono, and if it was a rare candy, they would have won. You know, I think the perspective skews a little bit, you know, whereas it's very visceral and memorable when you win because of attack, but the ways you lose or don't get an optimized game plan because of attack are, like, harder to quantify, so to speak, because it's just not as in the forefront of your mind, I think, when you're in the moment in the game.
I love softer techs. I mean, I really do. I love cards that have, like, multifaceted uses, cards that can help swing a matchup that could be used for other things. But, Minior is just such a narrow use case. I really have trouble with it, I think.
Would you say it has a mini use case?
I would. Yeah.
Very good. Well, I think we should also talk about the coming out of Charizard. I mean, this feels like another weekend where it's like we've swung back very favorably in the metagame as a whole to Charizard being, you know, a top pick. And so I still don't love Charizard personally as an archetype, but it is something that I respect and I would play if I felt like it was, you know, had the right meta. So what are your guys' thoughts on Charizard? It obviously had you know, a lot of placements in these two tournaments. So I'm just kind of curious to hear what you guys think about Charizard and how players are building their lists at this point.
A couple thoughts I got to sling. First, I want to issue a correction. Minier cannot even KO at Iron Hands with a Defiance Ban, so the card sucks. Unplayable garbage. Anyway, correction issued. Charizard I predicted was going to go well into the weekend because I think Charizard was the best, like, slam down response to getting Iron Hands by Maraidon. You know, you just go in, you vacuum the Iron Hands or you hit it and then vacuum it later. And then Maraidon is, like, really struggling to deal with that after 4 energy investment. And it just also, like, was generally well postured into some of these, like, Lost Zone decks that weren't really doing a lot of damage. It well postured to Mew, which was also well postured in the meta. So Charizard felt like a very natural conclusion to me as far as the next step in the metagame. Ironically, it feels like Charizard's harder matchup is, like, Gardevoir right now because Gardevoir can play that slower one prize game and outtrade you. And Gardevoir is super popular in LAIC, which didn't seem like it was going to sustain itself forever, right? Like, the Gardevoir was going to go down, in my opinion, coming out of LAIC.
I think that Charizard is just a really solid deck. It feels like the safe play of this format, if there is one. It you know, fares well against Mew, and you saw some players trying to bring Mew with Entei and Maraidon doing well. That was my natural inclination. That's something Riley and I talked about last week. And yeah, you know, I won a challenge with it last week. It felt pretty solid, but, you know, Charizard handles Mew very easily, and it just feels like a good, safe deck. And I know there's a lot of, you know, players who I consider to be some of the best players that are choosing Charizard, which also helps to kind of increase player confidence in the deck. I mean, certainly for myself, seeing players like Azul not be afraid to pilot Charizard and take it to major events and do well with it. Robin Shulls getting a top four placement with Charizard, it just makes me more confident in the deck. Okay, like you kind of have these feelings about a deck, and then you see other top tier players that you respect having positive feelings about a deck, and you're like, oh yeah, this thing's real, this thing can hang. And and then watching the matches play out, it feels like the proof is there. Charizard is a top threat. It is getting stronger, and it's here to stay for sure.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point where you're talking about the metagame shift, because that was where I was going after LAIC2, where we think, okay, Mew is going to be on the increase, right? If we see a deck that's loaded with all these multi-prize basics, something like Maridon winning, you would expect a lot more players to gravitate towards that. That's what we saw, right? We saw Maridon with a very large meta share in Gdansk. And, you know, Mew just seems kind of like, okay, you're going to take a lot of, you know, advantage of that huge meta share of something like Maridon. So that was one. And then Charizard being good into Mew, if Mew is good. And we're saying that some of these other decks that Charizard has historically had some rougher matchups into are going to be maybe on the decline in terms of meta share. Then, yeah, Charizard all of a sudden rises up. And it's just kind of fun to see the wave of the metagame and how it's shifted here into this last weekend of tournaments.
Right. And, you know, if I'm looking at Gdansk, my thought is almost that, you know, Gardevoir becomes the top tier archetype again. You know, I would love to be playing Gardevoir into that top eight in Gdansk. And, you know, no Gardevoir's made it there, but, you know, Gardevoir with a Turo probably would have just won the whole event if it made it in.
Right, but exactly. It's tough to look at just the top eight, right? Because you have the entire field to get through, right? And it's just, you know, if you're wading through the 20% of the Maridon out in the field, that can be really tough. I totally agree with you.
What I'm more so saying is, you know, the fallout of these tournaments is usually like you centralize around the decks that perform the best. You know, the Charizards, the Mews, the Snorlax stalls, and the Gardevoir is partial to that sort of metagame. It's not partial to the Entei Valiant and Maridon metagame.
Right. Sure.
So we've got Charizard, we've got Gardevoir, we've got Snorlax. These are, you know, three major players from this past weekend. And also Mew. I mean, Mew having three appearances between the in top eight between the two regional championships. Mew didn't make a finals, but it's got a top four and it's got two top eights, so certainly still there palling around. And as it does, right, there's been some outrage about Snorlax, which I'll kind of entertain here for a moment. Yeah, players just, it's such a toxic deck. It's like all the yapping about Snorlax. I feel like it's kind of just like, you know, white noise. The deck is very tackable against. In fact, you know, sometimes stall players will say things like, a theme deck is the scariest deck for my deck to play against just because it plays a bunch of switch cards for no reason. So they just have the switches randomly and are going to be able to beat the deck. And I don't think that there's any problem with decks that keep other decks honest, you know, pressure resources, things like that, force a thoughtful game like that. I think that's totally good and healthy for a format. And in my mind, you know, I'm just like, okay, well, if you don't like Snorlax, then either play a deck that counters it or tech for it. Just like Mew VMAX. I mean, you could tech for Mew VMAX. You choose not to. You could tech for Snorlax. You choose not to. you choose not to and you're mad. You know, just if you're really mad, then do something about it, right? Because you can. And these are not S-tier decks that are unbeatable and on another plane. They're not. It's just they are decks with answers. And it feels like a lot of, you know, the kind of cluster of top decks feels all pretty evenly matched, you know, against one another, except for Baxcalibur, because that deck's terrible and didn't perform at all.
I had to throw that in there.
Yeah.
You knew it, man. Sure. I thought Baxcalibur was like decent in this format. You knew. You saw right through that deck. That's a fake deck, too. That goes right into the Roaring Moon tier.
Yeah, it does, bro. Oh. The fake deck tier. Right, fake. Fraudulent tier.
Fraudulent deck.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Roaring
I think
Moon.
Andrew said something similar last week, and it still shocks me.
Oh, yeah, say it. Yeah, go ahead.
Just Gemfowl has to be better than Roaring Moon. A little bit.
I think I said that, like, Roaring Moon, was it last week that I said
you
Roaring...
said it was fraudulent, yeah.
I said Roaring Moon was fraudulent, like it was Reshiram and
Zekrom.
And Zekrom tag team GX tier, like it was Rayquaza VMAX tier. Like, it's like that. It's like
Gengar Prime.
I think
Gengar's
a little better than that, though.
No, dude.
Just a little, like, I'm not saying it's not fraudulent. I'm just saying it's better than Roaring Moon. Like,
okay, the fact that we're even having an argument here, I feel like should speak volumes.
The fact you're like even able to entertain that conversation.
Yeah, right.
Right. We're like tier listing, like, you know, D list, you know, D tier pizza places. You know what I mean? It's like, what's
Pizza Hut and Little Caesars.
Yeah, Pizza Hut, Little Caesars, bro. Like,
having a mid off.
Like, Pizza Hut has to be better than Little Caesars, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? It's like, yeah, we have the D list celebrities and we're trying to, you know, who's the better actress, right? Lindsay Lohan or Kirsten Dunst? You know, it's just, does it matter?
Lindsay Lohan, bro, come on.
What was that? What was that for,
man? Whoa. People catching strays out here for no reason.
Lindsay, if you ever tune in, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to throw you under the bus like that.
But yes, I mean, Baxcalibur didn't show up. Let's, you know, and I like to throw the deck under the bus because ragging on Baxcalibur is kind of my shtick. But why? Why isn't it showing up? Can we give any thoughtful other than it being fraudulent? And can we give any thoughtful insight as to why this deck is not performing to the point where Jake Gearhart thought it would be?
Well, one thought I just want to put into the ether, and I don't mean to slanderize anybody, but Jake did tweet this past weekend that he won his first ever League Cup. So, that's all I'm going to say. First ever. I'm just saying,
right.
certain people shouldn't have, like, such a stranglehold on, like, the conversations we have in the Pokemon trading card.
I think, okay, so this is my brilliant idea. And I think that Elon could implement this, is that when you sign up for Twitter, you should have to use an ID, and your age needs to be posted next to everything that you post. So that then when I'm scrolling...
Man, that's going to end so badly.
At a moment's glance, I can see the age of the OP, and I can be like, oh yeah, keep scrolling.
I think you should also give, like, your
social...
your social security number, obviously, the last word, your last three-digit code on the back of your credit card. But it should also definitely say, like, your last highest completed level of education.
Oh, my goodness, dude. Come on.
Well, yeah, ageism and classism. This is going crazy. We got to reel it
in. Okay, well, no,
we
let's just, okay, let's just do, like, how about we'll pair it back, right? Because not everybody needs to have a college education. And that's not what I.
You're
am,
tripling
am implying.
Down. We just are.
I just want to have like a little mark that says like completed high school.
No,
left
no,
turn,
no, no,
bro.
No, 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 no,
no, no, no.
That's what I want.
We're getting back to the Chen Pao
has
zone.
Has a job.
We're getting back to the Chen Pao zone. Chen Pao is
in a serious relationship.
Oh my god. Okay, Chen Pao.
You can't judge people's opinions based on if they're in a relationship or not. That's crazy.
High emotional crazy. Intelligence.
Oh my god. So Chen Pao, why is it underperforming? Is it going to show up in San Antonio? Is it going to prove us all wrong? Can it get to a point where we disrespect Chen Pao so that it rears its ugly head? It actually wins an event? Is it capable of winning an event?
I don't think Chen Pao is just good enough. Like, I think the Iron Hands thing has done better than Maridon, or by Maridon, and honestly done better by Tord's deck as well. and the high damage thing isn't like that appealing of a niche right now. I think Chen Pao's one selling point is it's pretty freaking good against Charizard.
Yep, I was just gonna say that.
But I guess like every other deck in the field, you really would rather be playing something else. So unless you're expecting like a 6 Charizard day one, you know, why would you pick that over a different deck?
I think one of my biggest issues with Chen Pao, to kind of break it down and actually say like what is happening with this deck, you know, it feels like it's falling off a little bit, and why is that occurring? I think that Countercatcher is not doing Chen Pao any favors. I think that, you know, the Baxcalibur on the bench used to be kind of safe.
It's a good
now
point.
It's kind of definitely not. And Chen Pao is a deck that needs to, you know, discard all of its energies every time it attacks. And with Countercatcher, that Baxcalibur is looking mighty tasty. You just bring it up, knock it out. The Bibarel, bring it up, knock it out. Whatever looks like the weakest point on that Baxcalibur player's board, we are going to target it down and knock it out with, you know, precision accuracy.
And then maybe even disrupt the hand. And, right. And play a path, right? Mm-hmm. You certainly see that. Like Giratina, right? Baxcalibur, gust up, Roxanne path. I mean, that is just a death sentence for that kind of deck. So I think you're really onto something, and that's not really anything that I had considered heavily, but it makes a ton of sense, right? Because Chen Pao, last format, was in a fine spot. Again, still like not something that our group would ever really consider, something that we didn't take too seriously in terms of us bringing it to a tournament, but we saw it have multiple top 8 placements at tournaments in last format. That's not the case now.
No, and I do think it's, you know, to be fair, Lost Zone Tina also didn't earn any top 8 placements this past weekend either, you know, and I'm not ragging on Lost Zone Tina, but we always rag on Lost Zone Tina. So, I mean, like, yeah, you know, Lost Zone Tina getting a little bit of a break this weekend, you know, but it also didn't perform. The top placing Lost Zone deck was the Tord Box. Tord's deck featuring a whole bunch of different characters. We've got just Singleton attackers, Roaring Moon EX, Iron Hands EX, Radiant Greninja, 1 Cramorant, 1 Sableye, only 4 supporters, just 4 Culverses. Yeah, a 1-1 Palkia V-Star.
No,
oh, baby. Yeah, yep.
Yeah,
that's the deck.
That one's pretty crazy. I think we should talk about Tord's extra special spicy Lost Box deck after we thank today's sponsor.
So true. JW, you want to ring us in?
The Tag Team Pokemon Podcast is presented by Manscaped, your premier company for men's grooming products, whether it's extra little nose hairs, extra little beard hairs, mustache hairs, down there hairs. Manscaped has you covered with a wide variety of products.
Absolutely. Whether you're trying to look good or feel good, Manscaped's got you covered. I'll tell you what, folks, with San Antonio coming just around the corner, you don't want to be caught in day one without your Manscaped boxers. Not saying they're guaranteed to make you day two, but I'm not saying they're not. So. And
if you want to get your hands on some of the best Manscaped products for your men's grooming needs, make sure to visit manscaped.com. Use code TAGTEAM. You'll earn 20% off your purchase and free shipping.
Don't pay shipping in 2023.
Fantastic deal. Fantastic deal.
Seriously, though, check out Manscaped, and thank you so much for their continued support of the podcast.
So let's talk about Tord's deck. This is weird for a number of reasons, right? If we're thinking about Tord Rekalev, he's played he's played almost exclusively Gardevoir for a while. Gets DQ'd.
Yeah, man, It's the Beat the Allegations deck.
Well, right. It really is. It really is, right? Gets DQ'd at LAIC for slow play. And now we see him playing a deck that, I mean, frankly, can be just as slow. But
he was not moving slow.
He was not. Talk to us a little bit, Riley.
I mean, I put my opinion very candidly out there that last week that I thought he was rightfully sort of retroactively DQ'd for past infractions, and that he was a smart enough player that he would clean up his act and move on with it. And I think he rose up to that challenge, to be honest. I think he proved that, hey, I'm the best player in the world. I'm going to play this crazy deck. I'm going to move as fast as I can. And I'm not going to be putting up with this anymore. And I really respect that, to be honest. I really respect as a player that he recognized that situation and took charge of it, as opposed to, you know, falling into the habits over and over and creating the worst possible narrative for himself. And the deck was sick. It was so awesome watching him pilot it, doing all these crazy combos and turns, 4 Colress and 3 Pokegear. Like, come on, man, that's awesome. Like, you can't hate it. You can't hate the hustle. I have made some strong statements about like his pace of play allegations in the past, and I truly, sincerely respect the way he handled it going into Gdansk.
Heck yeah. I mean, he was playing with something to prove. Gardevoir is a deck where there are so many cards and game actions. I mean, Lost Box has a lot, but Gardevoir has the most, right? When it comes to playing slowly in a come-from-behind game, at least
Gardevoir also has, like, more shuffling between their drawing.
So many, right? Whereas, like, Flower Selecting doesn't have any shuffling. You're just going, you're going, you're going, right? And it's a really cool deck, and I played it on stream today for like 5 hours. I mean, I felt like I really kind of got to get a hang of it. Tord popped into the stream and was like, people are taking this deck way too seriously. which, like, by the time he popped in, I was like, thank God you said it, bro, because I've been thinking it. It's really cool. And I think the most important thing about Tord's deck is that we're cracking the idea of a Lost Zone deck wide open. Like, stop thinking that Lost Zone decks need to be Dragonite and Raikou. They don't. They could just be Comfies and Mirage Gates with, like, whoever the best attackers are at the time. And or just power those attackers fuckers up and get them going, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, or your the favorite Pokemon that you have.
Or your favorite Pokemon, sure. Yeah.
That's nice. I like that.
But Iron Hands, I mean, Iron Hands and Roaring Moon are just broken. And why not play them? You know, play them both. They're both broken big basics. So sure, slap them together in a deck with other broken cards, and you've kind of just got like a good stuff deck. That's what I was describing it as on stream. It's just good stuff deck. People who like don't understand, how's this deck work? Why is it so blah, 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 blah? Like, no, it's just a good stuff deck. And good stuff decks have existed since Haymaker. Because guess what? The Haymaker deck from base set was just the best Pokemon and the best trainer cards slapped together in one
with a bunch of different energy. Yeah.
Yeah, with a bunch of different energy slapped together in one deck, because he had the three best Pokemon who didn't really go together, you know, Electabuzz, Hitmonchan, and Scyther, who just all did kind of different things, and they're the best big basic Pokemon. You slap them together, there's your deck. This is just another good stuff deck where you've got the good Pokemon with the best engine, and there you go. Boom.
Yeah, to me, I think the thing that maybe makes people the most skeptical is honestly the Palkia line. I guarantee if that 1-1 Palkia wasn't there, people wouldn't think anything of it. It's like, okay, yeah, like you're playing the Mirage Gate box deck, the newest version of it. I don't hate the idea of the Palkia. You know, you have your bigger, more consistent attacker, and you have access to Star Portal. You know, because I was thinking as I was watching Tord play, you know, the thing that a deck like this can lack is a way to do like 230 damage multiple turns in a row. And Palkia just does that and gives you Star Portal. So yeah, it's just a good stuff deck, and that's fine. You know, I think Tord also rightfully identified this probably isn't like the best, single best, most optimal build of Lost Box. But Mirage Gate's such a good card, and it forces you to play multiple different energy types because of how the card reads. So why wouldn't you like try and mishmash things together and see what works best?
Yeah, there are a few kind of really wild, you know, aspects of the deck, like just the 4 Colress, no Countercatcher, no Boss's Orders, no Roxanne. That's wild. No Manaphy. That's wild. You know,
I didn't know Manaphy was like a fine call for the weekend.
It was. But I could tell you, playing the ladder all day, you know, it was it was rough, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, just playing the Tord list, and it's like, and Tord said it himself in the chat. He came in and was like, you know, he's like, part of what made his run so successful was the surprise factor, and that people didn't know what to expect from his deck. They had no idea what kind of cards or counts he was going to be playing. But now that the information's out there, it's the surprise factor is gone, and it's pretty easy to play around the strategy if you know exactly what's coming next. So. So I think that that's important to note, right? And there's certainly some things that could be taken away from Tord's performance, but I would not just carbon copy his list and take it to your next event. You could probably, you know, adjust a few things.
Debbie, do you have any thoughts on the Tord special?
It was cool. Yeah, it was cool.
It was cool.
I mean, it's kind of showing, at least in my eyes, that Lost Box is probably the second best user of Iron Hands right now. I thought originally it was Chen Pao as first best. We know that that's a fake deck now. We can safely say lock that in the fake deck vault. And then now it's Maraidon at number one. And then, I mean, Lost, right? Like,
yeah.
That's really interesting that a Lost Box deck would be the second best user of Iron Hands.
Playing towards deck, you know, which played no vacuums and frankly was pretty slow at getting to 10 and sometimes even to 7 because of that fact, right? No four seal stone, no vacuums. You get to have a little bit of a rough time getting to 7 and 10 sometimes. I got turn one Iron Hands twice on stream today by Maraidon playing that deck and could not respond either time. It was brutal. Yeah. And I lost those games. I mean, it was really tough. Like one time I just like prized like the Roaring Moon and I just like couldn't answer the Maraidon. There was just nothing I couldn't answer the Iron Hands. There was just nothing I could do. And I was, you know,
I think that is one of the weak points of the metagame or something that players can exploit, because I think there are a lot of decks right now that straight up just fold to a turn one Iron Hands.
And I legit think that Maraidon can actually get it out a decent amount of the time. Too. As I'm playing and tweaking Maraidon list more, it's not that hard to hit it.
Are you going more for like a double turbo build? Are you playing something more like what Juho won with in LAIC?
I think like something between Juho and Gabriel's list.
Who was the winning senior at LAIC.
Yeah, like something between those two is where I think the sweet spot is. I probably don't need two copies of Iron Hands, but I really like the double Arvin in Gabriel's list. The Arvin like really makes it happen.
I've been getting sauced by the 18 lightning no path builds.
No,
that's the,
really?
Those have been the builds, no, that have been getting the turn,
dude.
One.
Oh,
those
geez.
Are the ones. Those are the ones that have been getting the turn one hands against me, man. It's just like they go. They play Battle VIP Pass, and I'm like, I'm so ruined.
Embodied for sure.
I'm like, I know exactly what list you're playing.
Yeah. The issue with that build, I don't hate that build. Like, I've had actually a number of players come up to me and ask, like, hey, you know, come up to me, DM me and be like, hey, what do you think of this build? It's not the worst, but it just, I have found when I've been playing it that it just has no late game. And obviously, it's not a deck that's looking for a late game, but if you don't get that turn one Iron Hands, bro, you're not winning. You're not winning. And there are some decks where it's like a turn one Iron Hands doesn't really matter all that much. So, I find that a little more well-rounded Maraidon deck is probably the way. But I
well,
do kind of agree with
like
you.
The
yeah, Riley, of... where you're like maybe the higher energy count in Maraidon to try to facilitate the Iron Hands a little bit easier is cool. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I think Maraidon's good. I don't know. It did kind of fall off though, low key in Gdansk. Like going from 20% basically of the metagame to no copies in top 8 is a real like a wah wah sort of moment for Maraidon.
Charizard's still gonna be a tough matchup. Mew is gonna be a tough matchup. So
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Just based on the top 8 alone.
I really did think Mew was gonna get the European tax. this weekend.
Yeah, it did. Felt like you called it. I also was in agreeance. Yeah,
but it didn't collect the tax because it didn't win. So
I've been seeing some takes on the X app that on the X app that. The format's kind of rock, paper, scissors, and people are feeling a little disenfranchised with it. What do you guys think about that? And, how do you feel about the health of the game at large? I think, personally, it could just be a little bit of the fact that, looking ahead, we're probably not going to get a significant shakeup between now and March. So this is the bed we're lying in for a little while. And how do you feel about that?
I think the meta's fine. I'm curious what they would define as the rock, the paper, and the scissors in that analogy, because it feels like there's multiple decks that don't really fit exactly into that mold or dichotomy. You know, you have like Gardevoir and Charizard and Mew type of decks, I guess, could be an RPS sort of situation, or I don't even know. Like, I feel like decks take some extreme matchups, but that's not necessarily unique to this format. I do think it's a little bit of a bummer that we're on such a break before we get any sort of shakeup. I like it when there's a little more consistency in set releases, but so I can understand getting disenfranchised in general, but I don't know. I think we're in a fine state overall.
Yeah, the format evolving feels
decks
really
in
cool.
A format with Iron Hands. Like, what more can you ask for?
I think the format feels really cool. I think Gardevoir stays a top contender. Charizard's a top contender. You have Maraidon is great. Stahl is starting to, starting to really gain some steam. Like, we have a lot of archetypes. And what I was talking about earlier, I think, is we have a lot of ways to counter the decks that we would expect to be popular. There's enough techs in the format. There's enough card pool available to any player that they can tweak their deck to give themselves more of a chance in certain matchups. So that's what I really value in a healthy metagame, is that we have kind of a diversity of choices, but then also within whatever archetype you choose, you have those specific card choices that you can make to improve your chances against certain matchups. I think it's a great format right now.
I mean, I can't really complain. Having played the format for hours on end on TCG Live every day for the last few weeks, it's fine, and I feel like I've got quite a fun little pool of cards to play around with, and then rotation will be coming up before we know it. Perhaps.
I mean, this is the most fun I've had with the format since Worlds, so I don't know. I think it's in a plenty good spot.
Yeah, I think so. I've certainly had way worse experiences. And when you kind of look at the game as this thing that needs to constantly evolve, yet constantly remain familiar, that's almost an impossible task, right? How do you get something to constantly change, yet constantly remain the same, and constantly feel fresh, right? While maintaining all of the things that the players love about it. How do you do that? It's a very difficult thing to ask of game designers for a game that's been ongoing for 25 years. And I think that they're doing a fine job now, especially having come from the dark ages of the tag team and the VMAX formats. I think that, we seem to kind of be in the clear right now. Things are smooth sailing and going pretty well.
Yeah, man. I would much rather play this than go back to VMAXes or go back to Arceus Intel mirrors or any of that. So,
yeah, I'm cool on the Palk Intel NAIC experience. I think I'm good on that. The Arc Intel mirrors, yeah, I'm good on that too.
Do you think there's any more room for innovation? Like, and where do you see the innovation coming from?
Cloth's rise just asked, to power.
What's that?
Cloth is coming in hot.
I mean, could it make some noise? I mean, that I just care. I'm curious,
dominating,
like,
the stall matchup.
Yeah, true facts. Are there any decks that you think, like, okay, they're kind of gliding under the radar, maybe even like a Roaring Moon, dare I say, that could really peak here towards towards this part of the format.
I think Urshifu and Talion is kind of slept on. It's like consistently just under the top eight threshold at these tournaments, and very few people are playing it. You know, people were trying to play very fraudulent Urshifu Iron Valiant decks, and I think they lost sight of the truth in Inteleon.
Yeah, I think I was just kind of thinking that actually, Urshi and Inteleon. I was my card that I was gonna point out where I think that there could be more innovation is with, you know, the devolving TM. I think that that card is very powerful, and with your evolving decks like Charizard, like you know, like Gardevoir, that is, and you're talking about the HP discrepancy between an 80 hit point Kirlia and a 310 hit point Gardevoir, the HP discrepancy between a 90-100 hit point Charmander and a 330 HP Charizard, like that's a lot of difference, right? So
could you quantify that for me? How much is that?
It's at least like 200. that's a lot. These Pokemon so are true. Getting like are getting three times bigger.
He was a teacher, ladies and gentlemen.
And I think the Devolver TM, you know, it got second place at LAIC in the Entei Valiant deck. I think that the Devolver TM is a card that we could see start to crop up in more lists.
Well, but you need, I don't know, there's part of me that says, yes, the Devolver TM is cool because, especially in a deck like, against a deck like Charizard that is now playing, you know, we've kind of seen the Charizard list standardized to include Pidgeot and so be more rare candy focused. But you need a way to make full use of the Devolver TM, right? Like if you're just going to slap, like you can't just slap it in. It has to come paired with a way to take a multi-prize turn or to take a knockout that turn. Like with the Iron Valiant deck, you could devolve and you could take those prizes, those extra prizes. Or similarly, like you could, you know, maybe you're playing a Devolver, but you have like a Greninja in your deck, right? So on the next turn, you could snipe or something. I mean, it. I feel like it has to be paired with something. I'm just not sure how I would utilize it outside of a deck.
Could
like
it ever be like an anti-Charizard sort of tech, though? Like if they're three rare candy deep and you just like Iono devolve them and you deal with them the next turn, like that doesn't seem the worst.
I mean, like I guess.
Against Charizard in particular. Like that'd be useless against Gardy, right? But
yeah. But it would be one of those things where at a regional, I don't think that would. Like that might win you a round or two, but the deeper you go, the more your opponent's going to be able to
that's
play.
That's a lot of match points for one slot.
I guess.
Two rounds?
I mean, it wouldn't even be a round. It'd be like a game, right? It'd be a single game if you could
but
pull it off and if
it
works.
Round?
It's game three of the pivotal rounds against Charizard. So,
yeah. So that's what it counts the most.
I just feel like your opponent could play around it in other
ways. I'm ready to start cooking, bro. It's my spread deck arc, okay?
For sure.
My spread arc, bro.
But Urshifu Intel could play that card, right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely could. You know, and you're already playing like the four seal stones to like retrieve it. So it does not seem out of the question.
Now that would be a deck that I could see playing the Devolver.
That's what I'm 100%. Saying, man. It's a broken deck.
Okay, interesting. You guys have any cups coming up?
Cups? I might go to one on Saturday, but we'll see.
Yeah, Andrew, you got a cup?
I gotta look at the schedule. I don't know. I did a challenge last week. All right, that's big.
I know, man. I was when you said I won a challenge. I was like,
it was at Full Grip.
He attended a challenge.
It was at Full Grip Games, so I did not have to go anywhere for it. I simply walked downstairs to the challenge. Okay, like from work, the shortest commute to challenge ever. I figure if I just do all of Full Grip's challenges and I get points at all of them, I've done most of my job. So maybe that's. Maybe
plus, it's good to show face for the fans.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Well, I like the Full Grip community. I really do. I like that. I like our
Full Grip. Good to sign some autographs. Community. Good to take some photos.
Not at Full Grip, dude. Come on, man. That's like in my backyard, bro. People are cool there. We're not doing that.
Yeah.
You got a cup, JW?
I wish I did, bro. I tried to go to a cup last weekend, and I message the head judge, and I'm like, hey, I'm on my way. Like, I'm going to make it right before registration ends. And he messaged me back, and he's like, oh, actually, we moved registration up half an hour. And I
hate when that happens.
And the only way I would have known, the frustrating thing is the only way I would, and this is actually a really big problem, I think, in the game right now, because I've had this happen multiple times, is that the most accurate information that you can get about non-regional and IC tournaments is from Discords. But how am I supposed to know to join your Discord or where it is if I'm traveling, if I'm a visitor? Even at
the
regional
level, right? Like, you have to be on following like random Twitter accounts to get the updates for registration being posted. Like, it's actually a huge problem, in my opinion, that there's information no central transfer. Way to get information.
Yeah, I'm talking about the logistics of like start times and entry fees, and you know, even location is hard to find sometimes on the event locator. But yes, I completely agree with you, Riley, where it's like registration is a big problem. I mean, that seems like a whole episode to itself. But I've had this happen where I was in Baltimore. And I'm not like knocking these places. I'm just giving like, okay, here's where it happened. But I was in Baltimore and I was visiting, right? So I was playing the role of a new player in an area. And I go on the site and I find my event, and it has no, it has no warning that there's a cap. Right. So I'm just like, okay, I'll show up. Right. And then they're like, oh, actually you're on the wait list. And I'm like, how am I supposed to know? That's so stupid. Like, you can't write it that there's a cap, and like, I go to your website and it doesn't even say that there's a cap. Like, what is happening to registration for these events? It's absurd, in my opinion. And like this one, the cup that I was saying, it had on the official website the start time. How am I supposed to know without going to a Discord that you moved it up half an hour?
It cannot be on Discord. Absolutely not. No.
It's absurd, dude. It's like for a new, like, and I'm playing, horrible. You know, and this affects me like almost zero, because I just want to play the game and I already have my invite. So like, if I didn't have the invite at this point, like, I'd be like, my brain would be bursting, because this is not how you treat your player base. But that, you know, I'm just thinking now, I'm like, as a new player,
all be run by AJ Schumacher, bro. They just
it's like, but this is happening to me multiple places, and I'm like,
I know, kind of like going crazy. Listen, there are tiers of event organizers, okay? There are tiers, bro. There are tiers. There are levels to this.
Yeah.
You want to have the best events, you got to move to Akron, Ohio.
Okay. Bet.
I have one final hot take factory before we finish for today. Entei Valiant made zero showings in either Brisbane or Gdansk. Is Entei Valiant a counterfeit deck?
Yes.
GW?
I'm not going to say counterfeit. I'm going to say low tier two. I won't say counterfeit.
Okay.
I think it's better than Baxcalibur. I think it's better than Roaring Moon. And those, I think, are like verifiably counterfeit decks in this format. But it's not.
It's like great value. High. It's like great value brand. It's not like counterfeit.
Yeah,
it's not like,
yeah, hey, sure, sure. Yeah, it's
definitely like bargain.
It's Mr. Pibb.
Mr. Pibb to the Dr. Pepper.
Yeah. It's not a Dr. Pepper. It's not a Shasta. All right.
All right. I feel like it would be unfair to not have that topic. So I feel we've cleansed the air. We've made it. We've cleared the fog on all the fraudulent decks in the format. So hopefully you all can sleep after listening to this with a sound mind.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's going to bring our episode to a close. If you want to get more involved with the cast, you can follow us on the app known as x.com. I am at Real John Walter. We have Riley at Smiles with Riles, Andrew at Enjoy Friend, and the podcast at Tag Team Pokemon.
Thank you all so much for listening and your continued support. And we will catch you all next time. Peace.
See ya.
See ya.